dying inside. Hey, everybody, what's up? It's me, your host, Dangerous ASMR, and we're back unexpectedly. Why? We're here for another Drunken Dangerous. And today we are doing more reading of the worst mid 5 out of 10 rated creepypastas. Is it bad? It's still bad. If you're dating somebody and they tell you you're a 5, that's not a good grade, you know? Average. Don't, you know, and that's just a hint for anyone here. If you are to be in a relationship with someone you think is just average in appearance, you know, objectively, lie. Fucking lie. Okay, don't be objective. Be subjective. Through your eyes, they should be a 10 because you're fucking with them and they're allowing you to touch them. So 10 out of 10, right? If you say a 5, even if you think you're being generous, slap yourself. You're wrong. But anyway, worst rated, 5 out of 10. That's an F. So we'll see. Is it an F? Who knows? F us, though. We're here. We're reading it. Join me for the live on the 28th, where we will be reading the worst rated erotic horror. Though for me, erotic horror in general, it can be pretty bad. And now it's worst rated, so is it going to be, like, no horror? Is it just going to be sex? People are like, I hate it. It's so vanilla. Or is it going to be not even, like, sorry, I'm wearing a onesie and I have to take off the top. I'm not getting undressed. It's not weird. Don't make it weird. All right, we're starting off. And I'm doing this because I figured, you know, it's spooky month. What better time for creepypastas than Spooktober, or whenever you're listening to this, is a good time. Good job. Would you like to feed the birds? 10 minutes of reading, 8 minutes of reading, 5.18 out of 10. Just scrolling down a bit shaves a whole 2 minutes off. I had always loved this one cemetery ever since I was a little girl. Not only were the grounds beautiful, but the cemetery itself was absolutely massive. I always imagined it as a fantasy world, or a gateway to a totally different dimension, where the souls of the departed could spend their time before moving on to the next life. The one thing I loved most, however, were the birds. Back then, my father and I would go there to birdwatch from time to time, just to catch a glimpse of the birds in their glorious habitat, the glorious habitat of the cemetery. I even had my own set of binoculars with the name Evelyn taped to them. I hope that's your name.
Why are there always so many birds here, Daddy?
That's her voice. I'm sorry. Deal with it. It's a real horror. I remember asking.
Well, Evie,
my father answered.
It's because of all the trees.
I know this wasn't the real reason, but I'm sure my father figured this would be enough to satisfy an 8-year-old. Oh, I'm sorry about your voice, child.
Is that it?
I asked, unconvinced and startling sounding for 8. My father laughed and stopped to think.
Ha, ha, ha. Actually, there might be another reason,
he said with a smile.
There is a man that lives here called the groundskeeper. It's his job to make sure the cemetery looks nice for everyone that comes to visit, including the birds.
What a weird-ass fucking answer. They come here because the groundskeeper makes it look nice, and he's somehow... The groundskeeper doesn't give a fuck about the birds, though, I would think. Making it look nice would include keeping the birds away so they don't shit everywhere. I'm just saying, they're going to shit on the gravestones. maybe he's enlightened and he doesn't care. He's got a Swiffer for cemeteries and specifically made for bird shit for all the birds he feeds. This answer made my imagination start to run wild. Me too. I would come up with little stories of how the groundskeeper, a man I never met, would go about his day. I pictured an old man strolling through the cemetery with a shining smile. That's creepy. Why is it shining? Watering flowers and feeding the birds. As I got older, I began to spend less time at the cemetery, and my stories about the groundskeeper were pushed to the back of my mind. This was, of course, until the day I actually saw him. It was 2 days after my 13th birthday, and my parents were driving me to school. We stopped at a red light right in front of the cemetery, and I proceeded to look out the window. I smiled, remembering the days I spent there when I was little. My smile quickly faded when I noticed a man sitting under one of the trees. His shaggy gray hair covered his face, and he was wearing a very dirty-looking peacoat. As the car began to move again, I looked out the back window to see if I could make out anything else before he was out of sight. Nothing. I was about to turn away when something caught my attention. I jerked my head back and saw a flock of birds gather at this man's feet.
"Hey, who's that in the cemetery?"
I asked my parents. My father was driving, so he told my mother to take a look. What are you, like, my boss? No, fuck you. Crane your own neck. Crash. I don't give a shit. You called me a five. Fuck you. My mother turned her head to look out the passenger's side window, but it was too late.
"I didn't see them, sweetie,"
my mom replied.
"But the cemetery is closed right now, Evie. There shouldn't be anyone in there."
"It's probably the groundskeeper," my father said. "I'm sure he's just getting ready to open up soon."
I didn't say anything. I hadn't thought about the groundskeeper in years, but I did remember how I envisioned him. He was like shirtless, abs upon abs, oiled up, hair rippling in the breeze, birds surrounding him like wings, like making up wings of his own out of birds. I don't know how that works, but he did it. This person was nothing like what I had imagined. Yeah, I know. My grandfather died from a heart attack about a month after I graduated. Stop getting these ads in the way. So annoying, they just pop up out of nowhere. After I graduated from college, he never had any health issues, and even the doctors found it to be a freak occurrence. I mean, old people can just die of heart attacks. Like, maybe his heart was perfectly clean. However, these things can happen, and my grandfather was able to live life to his fullest, even at the age of 90. Okay, they would not be like, whoa, how weird. This 90-year-old's heart gave out. That's not weird. They wouldn't even do an autopsy. He's 90. 90. When you die at 90, it's almost always not like, whoa, what a surprise. Only a few close friends and family came to his funeral. My grandfather never liked large crowds, so we actually found this to be appropriate. Actually, I'd find that depressing as shit. I don't know. Like, I don't like large crowds either. Like, yeah, if you're agoraphobic, you don't want anyone at your funeral. Who started this rumor? Yeah, actually, don't come. Grandpa really did not like people. No, no. It doesn't matter that you were married to him for 50 years, Grandma. Stay the fuck home. We arrived at the cemetery at about 4 p.m. that day. With the funeral was at 1. They missed it like Grandpa would have wanted. It was beautiful fall afternoon, sunny and not too chilly. I stood next to my parents holding their hands as we listened to the priest. As he spoke, my eyes started to wander. Oh no, I hope they weren't like a hook. Sorry, I was thinking of this last story I read. Hooked a guy like a fish, and it was just stuck in my mind. No reason. I was taking in the fall colors when I noticed a dark figure sitting on a bench under a tree only a couple of yards away. It looked like a man, but I couldn't tell, and my eyes remained fixed on him through the service. If you can't tell, do not assume pronouns. When it was finally time for us to leave, the man was still there. It could also be a ghost. It's a creepypasta.
"Dad,"
I whispered, turning to my father.
"Do we know that guy?"
Why are you so nosy? My dad looked over to the man sitting under the tree. A couple of birds flew in and landed at the man's feet.
I don't know him, my dad answered. He's probably just another visitor. Or someone that works here.
He's like, why are you bothering me about this shit?
Like the groundskeeper?
I asked. My dad looked at me, a little surprised.
I guess he could be,
my dad said, looking back up at the man.
Looks like he's got away with birds.
I looked back over to the man. He's like making out with a pigeon. There were now well over a dozen birds surrounding him. He must be covered in shit. Some were perched in the tree, some stood at his feet, and some even sat next to him on the bench. Out of pure curiosity, I decided to go over and speak with the stranger. Since my family was close by, I wasn't worried about anything bad happening.
Excuse me, I said as I approached the man. Do you work here?
The man looked up at me. He was wearing a dark pea coat and had messy silver hair. He never changes that coat, ever. He was young, probably in his mid to late 20s. His silver hair. But his complexion was off. His skin was a ghostly white. I told you, he's a fucking ghost. And it looked like he hadn't slept in days. I called it. I knew it was a ghost.
I do,
he said. His voice was deep and not at all what I was expecting. I had to do something unexpected, okay? At that moment, an eerie silence fell over us. The birds had stopped chirping and even the slight breeze had seemed to disappear completely.
Oh, okay. I was just curious, I replied, trying my best not to sound uncomfortable. Well, nice to meet you. Have a good day.
I turned around and started walking back towards my family. I could feel several sets of eyes on me as I walked back, quickening my pace. Yeah, it's birds. This man frightened me, but I didn't know why. Well, you said he was like a ghost with silver hair. I've been around sick people before. Some that looked a lot worse than he did, describe them now. And I never had a problem with any of them. Oh, wow, you want a medal? I've also never been afraid of birds, or any animals, for that matter. Even still, at that moment, I could feel what I can only describe as a sense of impending doom. Well, of course, you've angered the birds. A few days later, I headed over to my grandfather's house to pick up a few of his belongings. All of the items that were packed away in boxes would be temporarily housed at my apartment while my family figured out what to do with them. After I loaded the last box into my car, I decided to do a final sweep of the house to make sure I didn't miss anything. I looked through the kitchen cabinets and on every shelf in the living room, but couldn't find anything. Thanks for letting me know. My family was always very thorough when it came to cleaning, so I really wasn't that surprised. My last stop was the bedroom. I went through the closet and all of the drawers and came to the conclusion that this room was empty as well. I was about to leave when a thought crossed my mind. The bed. I knelt down and lifted up the old duvet cover. It's like Grandpa's fleshlight. I'm sorry. The light from the window reflected off a small object that was pushed up against the wall. I reached under the bed and pulled out a small journal.
There's no way I'm leaving this behind.
Oh, wait, she's an adult now.
There's no way I'm leaving this behind.
She's very dramatic, I said to myself. I help the small leather-bound book closed. You help it closed? That's not what I would say.
She helped it closed and left the house.
That night I had a strange dream. I dreamt that I was a little kid again, and I was running through the cemetery. I remember sitting under a tree, humming a tune and watching the branches sway in the wind. Suddenly, the blue sky grew cloudy as the wind began to pick up. The leaves on the trees turned brown and fell off the branches. When the last of the leaves had gone, I heard a deep voice behind me.
It's a lovely day, isn't it, Evelyn?
I turned around and saw a man with the shaggy gray hair and a dirty peacoat. The man never looked at me, but instead fixed his eyes on a flock of birds headed in our direction. In my dream, I knew who this man was.
You're the groundskeeper, aren't you?
I said calmly. The man nodded, his gaze still held by the flock of birds that was now at our feet.
I am,
he replied. He knelt down beside me and handed me a small paper bag.
Would you like to feed the birds?
I woke up. I wasn't sure if the dream had scared me or not, but it definitely left me feeling uncomfortable. I turned on my light, sat up, and stared at the corner of my room. The boxes from my grandfather's house were all neatly stacked next to my dresser, with the journal I had found laid perfectly on top. I got out of bed, walked over to the stack of boxes, and picked up the journal. To this day, I'm not sure what made me want to read what was inside. I mean, who wouldn't, right? Perhaps the dream had sparked my imagination and curiosity. Either way, I opened the small book and began reading. There really wasn't a lot in it. It was mainly small sketches of plants, birds, and some text to go along with them.
My son is taking everyone to the cemetery again today. It warms my heart to know how much she loves that place.
This brought a tear to my eye. I was always close with my grandfather, and almost forgot that he used to be an avid birdwatcher himself. I turned the page and something fell to the ground. I picked it up and noticed it was an old Polaroid photo of me, my dad, and my grandfather. Upon examining it closer, however, I noticed another figure in the background. Holding the Polaroid in one hand, I read what my grandfather had wrote on the next page.
A beautiful day. A shame we didn't notice a young man sitting back there.
I turned the page.
I had a talk with the groundskeeper today. I think that guy liked birds even more than I do.
I started to feel uneasy. This sounded a lot like the man I met the other day. I turned the page again, only this time it was blank. I kept turning until I stopped at a page covered with text.
I saw the man again tonight. This time he was outside my bedroom window before he disappeared. There's no doubt about it anymore. It's him.
I started to get frightened. My grandfather had never mentioned anything about seeing people. Why would he keep something like this from us? I continued reading.
It's clear to me now. He won't leave me alone until I give myself up.
He's given him the bussy.
I'm opening the window.
To his asshole. The good old Grandpa Bussy, Grandbussy. Aw, he's given the Grandbussy for love.
I'm opening the window. I'll be food for the birds soon.
I closed the journal. I had no idea what I just read. Well, Grandpa's given up the ass. For you. Because he loves you. Nor did I want to. I placed the journal on my nightstand and called my parents. A few weeks passed after I showed the journal to my parents. They thought it was odd and said they would look into things, but told me not to worry too much about it. That was easier said than done, but I tried my best. Since I didn't have a job lined up, I had been actively searching for something since my college graduation. One morning, I decided to check some of the local job postings to see if there was anything new. I pulled up the website on my phone and began scrolling through. Suddenly, one caught my eye. It was an assistant groundskeeper position at the cemetery. There was nothing written other than apply in person. It didn't pay very much, but it was enough that would allow me to keep my apartment and pay my bills. On top of that, I would be able to hang around in the cemetery I had loved since I was a kid. But most appealing of all was the fact that I would likely be working with a strange man. The groundskeeper. The one I believe my grandfather wrote about. I could have let this go, but I felt as though I needed answers. I followed the instructions and applied the following week. Today is my first day. The end. I guess we never find any answers ever. Screw you for asking. Who was that old man? No one will ever know. And it's easy. You can ask so many questions and then be like, and then he died before you ever got the answers. The end. Beautiful. All right. We have time for another. And what shall we read? Oh, wow. 19 minutes. I don't know. The Brothers of Drain. Jesus, this one's 15 minutes. Well, you know, we'll read it. This will be the last one. It's pretty long. Why I Killed My Father. 5.19, 15 minutes, 11 minutes. Who knows? But the name is pretty good. My name is Edward Thubbard, and I recently killed my father. You know, you can just change your surname. You don't have to kill him. Now, before I am plagued with judgments of self-righteous proclivities, oh God, you're one of those. Allow me to first explain the circumstances surrounding my actions, and in exchange, I will permit you solicited judgments. I already hate you, Edward. If it was your dad writing this, I'd be like, I see why. Three sentences in. No, wait. Two sentences in. They were just very bloated. I lived in a small town called Thusdale with my family, which consisted of my mother, father, and younger sister. We lived a very modest life, as my family was desultory to pecuniary interests. Bro, stop. His parents didn't care about money, is what he's saying. But Jesus Christ, did you pull out that thesaurus harder? Jerk that thesaurus off. Get some more unnecessarily obfuscating words. Oh, show us how smart you are, Daddy. Sorry, just this, it just reminds me of Dean Koontz every time. And I only say this in particular, not because he did this all the time. Most of his books were written in fairly plain English, but then out of nowhere, occasionally, he would pull some extremely obscure term out of his asshole that I swear no one has ever used and will ever use after. For what reason? I don't know. To seem knowledgeable? This is 15 minutes of this. Can I? How is it? He can't. My God. All right. I'm sorry. We're going to have to keep going. Oh my God. Our home was a 19th century house in the 21st century. It stood at the peak of a steep hill neighbored by vast meadows and prairies. Both I and my sister were schooled at home with the help of my parents. My father was an eccentric. Did the beast catch him and lock him up in a tower? Wielding a variety of skills that range from carpentry to amateur astronomy, the latter of which will be of great significance later. Fap, fap, fap. My mother was a typical housewife. She cooked, cleaned, and soothed the family's restless needs. Was she drugged to the gills? This kid is giving pretentious teenagers so hard. Private school brat or something. My father had been very docile and uninterested in wishful imaginings. Well, you make it sound so appealing. But one day it all changed. I stress to remind you that not only were my parents dispassionate, but I also shared those similar traits.
My days consisted of trivial chores and enforced literary studies, as my mother always wanted me to be a poet. Sorry, it just gets so dramatic. But one night, something happened that would alter my entire kindred tradition forever.
It's so, like, soap opera. I can't. Like, he eats, like, chicken nuggets for dinner. Just calm the fuck down.
The day was as every other.
And also, what parents go, man, I really want my kid to be a poet one day? What the absolute shit? Are you sure you're not from, like, the 1600s?
The day was as every other. But when I submitted myself to the night's slumber, I underwent the most vivid fantasy. I appeared in a vast realm of sand and began slowly and involuntarily approaching a prodigious structure. The grandeur of the entire vista was coruscating. Soon my body halted, and I experienced euphoric feelings of ethereal incipience.
Bro, just stop. I smelled the aromatic winds of your own farts and watched as they formed into prepossessing vortices and watched the vortices transform into numerous spectral intricacies. The dream, although untethered, bore a striking resemblance to reality. But the entire preface was a presage. I was still confined in awe when suddenly, in a flash, I was transported to a dark void. When a lambent light shone, I found myself forlorn in a cryptic catacomb, entombed in a prison of prisms. Not a prism,
right? Like, when I tried to move, I was once again transported instantaneously, but to my relief, it was to my house.
'Cause you're dreaming, you dumbass.
I was standing outside. Wait, you were outside. It's your sleepwalking. I was standing outside by the porch and unconsciously throwing rocks down the meadow.
What? You're sleep throwing rocks?
I don't think that'll hold up in court. After a short while, I noticed a glimpse of what appeared to be my sister running perilously toward the house and gripping her finger in agony. She ran to me and explained that she had hurt herself while playing in the woods. I looked down at her bloodied hands, and just as I grimaced, I woke up. The next morning, I gathered my entire family and told them of my dream, and everyone hates you. No one gives a shit. Please don't gather everyone for a family meeting because you had a dream. Holy shit. This is why I killed my son. Exhibit 5000, Your Honor. But they all brush it off as unimportant.
Yeah, it isn't important. And continued their accursed daily endeavors.
Wait, you were saying they're going to work and making money is accursed because they won't listen to your fucking dream poetry, boy? Holy shit. Could you imagine fucking this guy? I mean, the poems he would write you. Holy shit. All right. He's continuing. They're accursed daily endeavors, fucking assholes. They were completely unfazed, so much that I myself began to believe that the dream was a byproduct of the emotional distress that accompanied adolescence. He's an adolescent. I'm shocked. Oh, no, your dream can't just be a byproduct of your hormonal stress. It's because you're somehow, like, seeing the future. But exactly 10 days later, we were all proven wrong. The day had gone by slowly as usual when I found myself idle and thoughtlessly resolved to go outside and toss rocks down the prairie. So I'm pretty sure you did it on purpose last time, since you chose to do it this time. Then the unimaginable occurred.
I noticed a glimpse of my sister from afar, and this time I was certain it was her, for she was wearing the exact dress she wore in my dream, and also, because it's your sister, you should recognize her. I waited in impatient trepidation, hoping that the impending scenario was not that of my unconscious fantasy. She approached me, and to my shock, her fingers were bleeding. Then she spoke the same exact words that she previously said in my dream. In a bittersweet state, I escorted her back to the house to get her wound cleaned and bandaged. When we entered the house, my parents were seated in the living room having one of their very frequent arguments. Without uttering a word, the sight of my sister's bloodied hands immediately halted their quarrel and sent my mother into a worried paroxysm and sent my father into complete stupor. Wow, they're useless. She cut herself and your mom, like, I'm having a paroxysm right now. I'm having a fit. The shock was not only a result of the blood, but of the occurrence of my revelation. Your revelation? Wow. My sister was attended to and went directly to bed. That night, our home was silent, with all its tenants lost in dazzled fascination at my unwandered phenomenon. Fap, fap. For me, the night was sleepless. I laid outside on the grass, staring at the sky until the stars conceded to dawn. As the sun came up, my family awoke as though all risen by the same fancy. I rose to find them awaiting me in front of the house. They all stood in a serene unity, almost as if they had shared a prior surreptitious conversation. I walked up to them in inquiry, and my mother began by revealing that they had discussed my recent happening and concluded that it was most decisive to use my great talent to assist the family through financial means. A request which was very untraditional but not unreasonable, I agreed. Yeah, you're clearly some kind of crazy dream psychic. Get him the lottery, win the lottery. And for months and years to come, I assisted my family through every capable means. With intense practice, I was able to form an acute understanding of the methods in which my dreams operated. He was a very special boy. I predicted many things, impending dangers, lottery tickets, and an innumerable array of both fortunate and unfortunate events. I also learned, most importantly, that only once every 10 days would my dreams foretell reality. For myriad twilights, I had forbidden dreams. Dreams of horror, fears of the macabre, strident night skies of immemorial collage. Years went by, and the nature of my dreams changed from wondrous to narrative. Although we were now much more fiscally untroubled, my family's lifestyle remained unchanged, with the exception of my father, who had developed a very peculiar interest in astronomy. So much so that he had given up most of his other interests and begun to neglect his daily duties. I thought they were accursed. He would spend entire days and long nights staring through his telescope, which he had purchased through means which my talents provided. He became so submerged in the ocular device that my mother began to worry. His efforts were so indefatigable that he seemed to have abandoned all social interaction with us. Months had gone by when, on an unfaithful night of my mystic sleeps, I experienced the most insidious spectral peregrination. Okay, don't know that. I dreamt that my father had killed my entire family, and I, being the only survivor, would stab him with a knife through his back to his death. Let me guess, you counted wrong. That wasn't a premonition. You kill your dad in precognition self-defense. Is my guess, but this is not Minority Report, okay? It's not going to work. The dream disturbed me to such an extent that I scarcely ate for days. my mind inhabited by portent thoughts. The following days were of complete misery. My nights were entirely dreamless, and my days dream-filled. I resented to inform anyone of my dreams, but the days of hysteria began to take its toll as we approached the inevitable 10th day. A week had passed, and with only 3 days left, I had noticed very little change in my father's demeanor. This gave me much-needed solace, and I decided it would be of no harm to share the contents of my dream with my little sister. I approached her furtively and told her everything, urging her to remain imperturbable, for the likeness of my revelations were very little. The way you mangle all of this, a conjecture which I had paltry belief in myself. I traversed the day watchfully, and when night came, the inception of my fear arose. It was almost midnight, and my sister had not returned from her daily outdoor recreation. What is it, though? What's her daily outdoor recreation? This was incredibly strange because my sister had a very strict curfew of sundown, a curfew which she followed with devoted ascetism. Why? It was also a great shock because I had just informed her of my dream. My hope was that all the consternation I underwent was just puerile superstition. I informed my parents of her disappearance, and they both had abstract reactions. My father seemed greatly distressed, but my mother showed a surprising sign of assertive tranquility. She said she was confident that her daughter would soon return, while my father... Hours passed without her return, and the house was now an abject pandemonium. We all grabbed flashlights and commenced an arduous search around the entire surrounding area, a search that would produce no results. We returned home almost at dawn, and my father convinced us to remain stolid and relent from informing the police, that's terrible, until we were able to ascertain the nature of her disappearance. We sat in pensive unity, when after an enduring wait, I decided to take the search into my own hands. I felt that because we had searched at night, it was much more difficult to find her, and some paths were too burdensome to traverse. So I aggressed unannounced to the woods. Just die there already. Just go. I searched for long hours, soon to submit to failure, when a pungent miasma sent me to a small area behind an oak tree. I sidled prudently to investigate the origin of the odor. To my utter shock, I found the dismembered head of my sister laying lifeless by the tree. Would she really start to stink that quickly? My mind rummaged frantically in a motionless frenzy as I tried to discern the origin of the monstrosity that had been made of my sibling. Her countenance bore a truly solemn misexpression. I grimaced when I noticed a profusion of blood flux incessantly from her cervical area in an almost unnatural pattern, and I struggled to ascertain how a human head could produce such an abundance, especially after what I believe was such a long period of time. How the fuck is she still gushing blood? And why does she stink if it just happened? The entire image left me so transfixed that the greatest horror of all eluded me. Oh, the horror! As my eyes tilted away from the incomplete carcass, I looked up at a high branch of the tree, to find the additional parts of her body swaying in a seated position and restrained by a tightrope as though she were a headless Mephistophelian figure. Her skin was incredibly pale and appeared nearly bloodless. Her clothes were scarlet and entirely bloodied, and her head absent. I briskly descended back to my house to inform my parents of my findings. On arrival, I found the house empty and resolved to lay in wait for their return. I tell you, the few inane hours seemed infinite. All the thoughts that accompanied me during that solid period were sinister and ominous. Why didn't you call the police? You just don't have a phone? I don't get it. Why didn't you call the police? Who killed my sister? Why? And what was the motive behind that ritualistic events? Later that night, my mother and father returned. They made their ingress with an ecstatic zest that was sure to be made somber by my revelations. As I spoke, my father's visage remained indifferent, and my mother's had a serene expression that worried me. Immediately, the police were called. The detective, joined by a team of forensic scientists, investigated the entire surrounding area and concluded that they would have to report the incident as a federal crime and pursue further query. Further query, a term I had heard the police use much too often. As I earlier prefaced, I live in a very small town, a town so desolate that it rests in an abnormal solitude. Well, my greatest surprise of the day wasn't of my sister, but of how the forensic scientists successfully made their way here. I trusted my belief that the entire display the police had made was simply theater, a show, a facade to give us the impression they were competent at their duty. Why are you so jaded in this? A belief which was later confirmed. A long day of endless investigation and inquisition led to nothing but added stress for everyone. Although, quite strangely, my mother seemed to be taking the entire situation much better than both I and my father. Well, clearly she did it then. Later that night, I approached my mother singularly with mirth at how she was handling her emotional state. I was almost too dolorous to reveal to her the secrets which I held, but reluctantly I confided in her all there was to know about my nightmare, a term which until now I refrained from using. Her reaction was expected, and her entire composure was altered. She warned me not to mention a word of it to my father, and also revealed that she had noticed cursorily disheartening changes in my father's nocturnal behavior. He sounds like a bear. During the day, he appeared perfectly placid, but at night he had apparently developed a profound drudgery in his astronomical wanderlust. My father would seemingly undertake long conversations with himself throughout the night. That is normal and normal, while staring at the stars through his accursed telescope. The contents of his garrulous rambles were puzzling. They ranged from lascivious comments to lusts of sexual violence, from loquacious praises of strange deities to eldritch chants of occultist rites. My mother also claimed that she had once caught him pleasuring himself sexually while uttering incoherent and almost indiscernible sentences. Why did she share that with you? I feel like that is not something you needed to know. Some of what she was able to decipher from his bizarre spewings was a name which he repeatedly yelled. Why are you telling your kid this again? Julia! Julia, my star! He would say. That was very odd, because my mother's name was not Julia. Neither I nor she had any idea what the provenance of that name was. It's a porn star he jacks it to. He would say her name in light of numerous praises and cosmic blandishments. His duplicitous maquillage had thankfully been discovered by my mother, the only person in the house who seemed somewhat sublunary that night. I retired to bed soon after, with my mother reassuring me that she would talk some sense into my father, and hopefully even more sense into the police. I awoke with little zest, prepared to face another melancholic day. I hate when you wake up and there's very little zest. I asked for extra zest. The dreaded ninth. My few waking seconds were languorous, but when I entered the living room, I witnessed the most terrifying sight my iris had ever beheld. A sight so sour it defied my cognitive comprehension. A horror so abject it sent my mind into an inexorable panic. The product of an evil, morbid, nefarious act. I woke to find the decapitated head of my mother laying fallen on the dinner table, with my father sitting right next to it, enjoying his breakfast oatmeal. On each of the dinner chairs laid the grotesquely severed body parts of my dear matriarch, the one who bore me, my beloved mother. After a few perennial seconds, my father looked up at me and said, "Edward, please sit," a request which I declined by dashing toward the front door as curtly as my capacity allowed.
I'm sorry, Father, I cannot reach maximum curtness at this moment. I have reached maximum capacity for curtness.
As I reached the door, I pulled with strength that I previously believed I was incapable of producing with my weak little bitch spaghetti arms. But to my surprise, the door did not budge. Then I heard my father's guttural voice yell out,
"It's no use. Julia has sealed the door. We both cannot leave until the night of revelation."
Of course, the next day was the 10th, when the quintessence of my dreams would be realized. Then he said once more,
"Edward, sit down, please. I have told you it is of no use. Destiny has already made its decision."
I conceded to his request and joined him at the table, next to the abomination that was formerly my mother. You gotta call her an abomination? Like, goddamn, it's just your mom cut apart. She's not an abomination. Jesus fuck, man. That's cold as hell. Like, if the person I loved was cut up, I wouldn't be like, ugh, an abomination. Get it away. I'm gonna puke. I don't know, dude. My wretched father turned to me once more, then placed his hand on my mother's head. The puppeter.
I love you.
And said,
"I want to tell you a story, my son, if you will listen. The lore of a being from a period before time, before kings, before gods, before even nothingness."
As he spoke, he gently stood up from his chair and slowly approached me. I had the urge to stand up and flee, but I felt restrained by an insurmountable force. He trundled conspicuously towards me. Oh no, he's trundling, run! Look, you can't spell trundle without run, let's just be honest. And then surreptitiously behind me. How did he do that? He's running toward you and then he just slips behind you, you don't notice it? I trembled at his ominous voice as he continued his impassioned speech.
"Before the time of existence, there existed a phenomenon. The great paradox. A thing, a thought, an occurrence that existed before existence." "Ha ha, my son, you are blessed with a great gift, both you and your late mother. The gift of clairvoyance, but I have an even greater gift. Perhaps the most lustrous gift of all." It's the diamond ring. "I had the privilege to have not only met, but also made love to my star, Julia."
You're both oversharing.
"The creation before creation. And now, through sacrifice, I will ensure her transcendence. Come with me, Edward, to my room. Watch as I build an altar for my lover Julia's return. We will remain at the altar until tomorrow night, the night of revelation."
As he said those words, I began following him involuntarily to the room. You should have just, like, you know, killed yourself, spared us all of this. The room was completely different from what I remember. He had ridden the room of all its furniture and had erected a massive statue that was redolent of a Greek mythological creature. It was humanoid in nature, resembling a woman. The statue was so intricate and prodigious that I was puzzled at how he was able to transport it not only into the house, but into his room. The figure was incredibly ornate. How did he create that figure? Where did he get the materials to do it? And how was he able to accomplish this without anyone else's knowledge? Night came, and I sat at the corner of his room transfixed as I watched my father complete the dreaded altar. It now began to appear even more grotesque than it had previously looked. He had included the body parts of my sister and mother, and did some other things, which I will not mention, for the images are much too abject. I don't understand how he was able to do anything with your sister's body parts when the police have them. Did you forget the police came and took them away? Did you forget that? Did he break into the police, like the coroner, and steal them? It was the final day. The day of culmination. My father had left the room only once to provide breakfast for me, a meal which I reluctantly accepted, but briskly consumed. He himself had not eaten since his infernal breakfast the day before. We sat in solemn silence until night approached, when he suddenly arose and said,
"It's time."
He unveiled a large knife and placed it behind him, in my view. He then turned to me for what was the last glimpse I saw of my living father and said,
"My son, watch as I reveal to you the true meaning of life, the true meaning of love. Alas!"
Then he got on his knees, facing the statue, and began reciting an evil doctrine of malign rites. I waited and watched for almost an hour. I'm going to be honest. I'm not that patient. An hour? Okay, Dad, I'm going to go. Good luck. I'm just going to go talk to the police. Bye. An hour? Dude, who has the time? I got to be honest. After like 5 minutes, I'd be like, oh shit, he's just crazy. There is nothing that's coming. He's just fucking insane. I'm not going to be like, oh, an hour later. I would never have been able to actually get this thing to come forth because I would have given up by then. An hour? Nah. Uh-uh. An hour. When suddenly a dark mass began to form around the statue, slowly revealing its presence. I watched the dark mass phantasmagorically transmogrify into a horrific celestial nightmare. The human species have yet to create a neologism which I can use to properly define that demonic creature. No attempt at description will truly do this monstrosity justice. It had a humanoid appearance and crimson skin. It was a lobster. Its legs were human hands, so it's a lobster with human hand legs. And its hands were of an obscure nature of innumerable limbs. It's got limb hands on its hand legs. And for what I regard as auspicious, I did not see its face. For as soon as it began emerging, I rushed to the blade behind my father and plunged it incessantly through his chest. Oh, through this chest. The attack was so vicious that I have great doubt that his body will be shown in his casket on the slight chance that he is given a burial. As my father fell, the creature slowly dissolved and returned to its heedless abyss. I laid on the bloody ritual ground in shock, fear, misery, and melancholy. Hopeless to what the future might present and dreading the night's upcoming dream. The malevolent being had manipulated my father with perfidious promises of perennial solace, a promise which the evil would undoubtedly have failed to uphold. The end. That's it. That was it. He stabbed his dad, who apparently, like, I don't want to say something, but you didn't have to kill your dad. He had his back turned to you for a fucking hour. I'm pretty sure you could have just crawled backward, went to the police, been like, my dad cut my mom up. He's in there on his knees praying at some crazy altar. They would have come in and arrested him, and then none of this would have happened. I'm just saying, I don't want to, you know, victim shame, but shame on you for being so stupid and using all of those fucking words. Jesus Christ, man. You know, if you're going to be an author, you should be aiming to write stuff for a mass audience, and using bigger words doesn't make your sentence better. Making it harder to understand doesn't make you a better writer either. Usually makes you a worse writer, but I should know. And hopefully you will join me again next time Or maybe on Saturday, and we can do some terrible erotic horror, and we can all be traumatized together. And until then, have a wonderful day, and I will talk to you guys next time. Mwah.